Welcome to Real Estate Investing for Women. On this show, you will learn how to create wealth through real estate the blissful way. That means with very little stress and very little time. We talk about strategies, mindset, heartset, money smarts, resources, and so much more to ensure you're able to create the success you most deeply desire. Now, here's your host, Monica Sawyer.
Today, I am so excited to welcome back to our show my friend Jen Duplessis. For those of you who don't remember Jen, let me remind you a little bit with her bio. Jen is referred to as the leading expert in creating world-class teams. She works with high-achieving leaders and entrepreneurs who are stuck at six figures and want to reach seven figures per year. Yay! Through her masterminds and private mentorship, she dramatically improves leadership skills to build powerful teams and enable multiplied results in record time while designing a balanced and exciting personal life. And that's really one of the things that I really love is her focus on sort of this balanced and exciting personal life. She has been in the financial services industry for four decades, and during her 35-year career, was listed in the top 200 of mortgage originators nationally and has funded over $1 billion in mortgage loans. Jen is the author of numerous Amazon number one best-selling books, host of two top-rated podcasts, and the producer and host of her own TV show, Tell Me I Can't, which reaches over 350 million homes monthly. She also has numerous Amazon number one best-selling books and is the host of two top-rating podcasts. I already said that, but we evidently needed to emphasize that. She is a charismatic speaker, having shared stages with such icons as Tony Robbins, Les Brown, Darren Hardy, Jeff Hoffman, Sharon Lecter, and many more, as well as being featured in numerous articles and covers of national recognized magazines, including LA Weekly and Success Profiles Magazine. Jen believes that entrepreneurs can live their legacy while building it, and it's time to break free from the daily grind with strong leadership skills and powerful teams. Jen believes it's time to move from working in and on your business to working above and beyond your business. Ladies, before we get into the meat of this episode, let's have a quick word from our sponsor. If your idea of asset protection and tax mitigation is setting up a simple LLC and family trust structure, you could be leaving your business, real estate, and personal assets completely exposed. Imagine instead being able to take advantage of the bulletproof asset protection tools formerly reserved for the ultra wealthy. If you'd like to mitigate or eliminate your capital gains taxes while protecting your assets from predatory litigation, visit blissfulinvestor.com/trusts. That's plural. There, you will find out more in a free recording with the world's foremost expert on a new kind of trust structure you've probably never heard of. This is a true generational wealth building business and personal asset protection and tax mitigation structure dating back to the founding of our country and is still used today. Just go to blissfulinvestor.com/trusts to find out more. It's free. Jen, welcome back to the show. So nice to see you. How are you?
Thank you so much. I am great. Excited. I'm always excited to talk to you, Monica. We've always had such a great, I don't even remember how we met, but we've always had such a great respect for one another. And I love watching what you're doing from afar because we don't get the chance to talk all the time.
Yeah. I love our relationship because I feel like we kind of exemplify the power woman relationship where when we're together, we're like best friends. It's like we never didn't see each other, but we just don't get enough time together. So I'm with you on that. And I so appreciate our friendship. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So today, Jen, I want to talk about a topic that I know my ladies have been thinking about a lot because I get a lot of emails about this, which is what the heck is going on with interest rates? And is this a good time to buy? And, you know, all of those questions around interest rates. And I just want to start by interjecting that when I started my own business, my own investing business years ago, so 25, 27 years ago, it's been a long time, my rate on my primary residence, this is not a non-owner occupied, my primary residence was almost 8%. I think it was 7.875 or something like that. And we were ecstatic. We were like, oh my goodness, the rate is amazing. And we were so ecstatic. And then the rates drop. And we had these amazing rates, which is fantastic, but it's also not sustainable. So when we look at the markets today, I feel like we've gone back to normal, even though that 8% rate was amazing in those days. I feel like we've balanced out a little bit. So what I'm trying to say is that when we were really, really low, there was always this anxiety inside of me that it's just not going to stay this way. But I do feel like now we're kind of stabilizing and we can really count on the markets kind of in the place that we're at right now. Does that make sense to you? Do you agree with me? Disagree with me? I'm here to learn your perspective.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, for years and years after the Great Recession, when rates just plummeted and everybody was all excited and everybody was buying, we kept saying, this is not a normal rate environment. We had the chairman of the Fed. They were doing quantitative easing. And the reason they were doing that is because, you know, we had supply and demand issues. And when you think about supply and demand, obviously it's a yin and yang, a teeter-totter effect. And what they did is that they put a cushion of buffer in between so that it wouldn't adjust. And slowly as they sold those off on their balance sheet, now what became was the real raw piece of this. And we knew that this was coming. We've been talking about it for years. Many people have been talking about it for years and years. And we also know that traditionally rates and markets are cyclical in anywhere from 24 to 26 month period. We're in a cyclical piece that came at a time when the quantitative easing was being let go. And so we get a double whammy on it. You know, supply and demand can never be equal. It's always being adjusted. It's a living, breathing thing. It's never 50-50 and just stay there. It's always adjusting. That was happening during that time, but we had this sort of safety net that the government putting around, you know, the Federal Reserve was putting around us to give us a false sense of security. So buying real estate from 2012 to 2018 was killer. That's the best time. That doesn't mean it's not a good time. There's a lot of reasons why we're positioning ourselves in our portfolio. I'm positioning those that, you know, I speak at a lot of investor conferences and I'm sort of that bridge between financing and real estate. And because I do both. So no, I think this is a perfect time to be looking at financing or investing in all kinds of things. I think that there's lots of opportunities out there. Some new types of financing that's out there, some build to rent because there's not enough inventory. So we see a lot of investors are now buying land, parceling it off, not builders, investors, parceling it off, having the houses built and creating their own little neighborhood of rentals. Some are doing buy and holds like that. I mean, and some are doing land contracts and things, but we're seeing all kinds of financing and all kinds of ways to invest. And with to our benefit, when interest rates went up, all of the owner occupieds went away. And so now there were more opportunities, but a lot of investors didn't take that on because they said, well, but the rates are too high. The thing that we have to remember about investing is it's a business decision. It is not an emotional decision. If the numbers work, the numbers work. So if you're buying at a higher amount and rents are going up now, gosh, we're over what, 8% year over year, it's going to continue to go up. So it means that we're going to make money on our rental properties, those of us that have that. So if the numbers work, buy the property. That's the bottom line. We don't have the same situation. I'll just say situation. We don't have the same pain points that we had when we had the bubble that everyone talks about. We're just going to be in a recession for a period of time. And I think we will come into a recession. We'll have inflation for a while, but we'll be in a recession for a longer period of time. It won't be the quick ones that we've been seeing or, oops, we had one. Oops, we're out of it. I think we're going to be in it for a little bit longer as the market adjusts and everything. But now is definitely the time to be looking at investing because our values continue to rise. Yes, my house is 1.5 million. My value has gone down 1.3% in the last year. But I think that's the higher end. When you look at the mainstream, you're going to see values are continuing to increase because everyone wants to have the opportunity to have homeownership. And there's a lot of sayings going out there with lenders. This will be the last point of this. Date the rate, divorce the rent, date the rate, and marry the mortgage, marry the house. So if we can say, let's stop renting for the renters, let's start looking at a temporary rate increase, but let's buy the house because that is elevating. And so if we can combine all those pieces for the people that are looking at buying houses from us or renting houses from us, this is the perfect time to be buying. And I know everybody says that. It's always the perfect time in real estate. But if ever there was a time now, it's now. We have, with COVID, there were a lot of people that didn't have to make their mortgage payment. We had some of that in the market where the government said, hey, you don't have to make your mortgage payment. But the realization is that's coming due now. Yeah. That is all coming due. And so regardless of whether someone has good equity or not, if they owe $30,000 in back payments on their mortgage because they took that easing, they're going to have to sell it quickly, which means they're going to have to lower their price, which means it's going to be available for more of us to get. So we have to have our eyes and ears open for every opportunity right now.
Could you break this down a little bit more for me? So that was kind of high level. I understood everything you said, but I know there's a lot of ladies that have not been in the mortgage industry. They're not going to really know a lot of those terms and sort of how that comes together, that trifecta that you just talked about. So talk a little bit more about that piece that you just said. So date the rate, marry the house, write the mortgage, and divorce the renter. Mm-hmm. So let's actually break that down a little bit more.
Right. Yeah. So what mortgage lenders are saying, and of course, I'm not one anymore, you know that, but my family still is in the business. I coach loan officers. But yeah, really what they're saying, this is speaking from the owner-occupied piece of this, the primary residence pieces, to divorce your rent because your rent's going up 8%.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, the rents are going up 8%. So it's people are getting forced out of the market, even for rentals. So now, yeah. And so now what's going to happen? And of course, that's supply and demand again. It's mm-hmm. all supply and demand. So if someone's selling their home, they might be looking at renting instead of buying again because they're waiting for rates to come down. And so now what's happened is a big supply has come into non-owner occupied investment properties. And so rents are now going up. And this is, of course, because of just low inventory across the country anyway. We just have such a lack of housing. This is why we have more homeless people too. So that's that part of it. Stop renting and start buying. So we're telling owner-occupied primary people to stop renting and start buying regardless of what the rate is. So date the rate, right? Date the rate because you're only going to have it for a period of time.
It's temporary.
But get the mortgage, you know, marry the house. And the bottom line is, I don't care if your rate is 2.5% or 3%, you will refinance at some point because you will have a life event that requires you to refinance to take out that equity that you created or get a home equity line, which, you know, those are at 10%. And when you look at your blended rate, it's actually better for you to just refinance and take cash out than it is for you to have that low first and that high second. It's better for you to do that. So people will let go of these great rates that they have. I know they're holding onto them so tight, but your house is sitting there with equity and it's doing nothing other than gaining equity, but it's not in the flow of cash. Mm-hmm. That's the problem, you know, is great, you have equity, look at me, but it's not in the flow of developing more cash and creating more wealth for you. So that's part of it. The other part of this is that when people buy houses, they're usually, used to be they were in their homes 5 to 7 years. Now we're looking at 7 to 10 years because we're just holding on longer because we're afraid to, where do we go? What do we do now? Right? The competition. So there's a little bit longer hold, but people historically only keep their mortgages for 4 or 5 years. So you're going to be, call it a holding strategy. You have an entrance, holding, and exit strategy. Your holding strategy is how long will you have the house? How long will you have the mortgage? So for investors, where the challenge comes in when rates are higher is that it's a fixed cost. It's a fixed expense. You run your numbers. Yes, the numbers work. So you buy the property. And of course, rents will go up over time anyway. But the challenge is that if you buy higher interest rate, then you have to refinance it at some point to have a better cash flow. Mm-hmm. And that is costly and it's difficult to do through traditional methods. It's available in non-traditional methods, but it's going to be at a higher rate today. Mm-hmm. But when rates go down, you may find yourself refinancing to something that's slightly lower, maybe not as low, but slightly lower, even in the non-QM world, right? In that non-qualifying mortgage world. But again, we buy properties for a couple of reasons, cash flow and appreciation, tax benefits, right? Mm-hmm. Cash flow, if the cash flow is there, buy it. If appreciation is happening, buy it. If you're getting the tax benefit, buy it. What are you waiting for? So regardless of what's happening, the odds are you're going to refinance at some point in time as equity continues to grow. So that's more of a breakdown of it is, again, you talked about your loan. When I got into the mortgage business in 1983, rates were 18.5%.
Yes. And that's why we were so excited. Yeah.
It's crazy. And people say to me all the time, oh, yeah, but inflation was lower and values of homes were lower. Yeah. And our income was lower, but it's all relative. Every bit of it is all relative. People will still buy. People still need a place to live. People are still going to have credit challenges and have to rent. And that is to our benefit. People will still have the inability to qualify for a mortgage. And that's where we come in and can help provide them housing. So I look at investing as not only creating wealth for myself and a legacy for myself, but I'm at that point in my life and in my age where I'm giving back. I think we learn, we earn, return. Learn, earn, and return. And a lot of the investments that I do are for helping people get into homes where they normally wouldn't have been able to.
Yes. And I'm doing very, very similar things. I love that learn, earn, return, because you and I are in that same stage of life where we're more on the return side. The way that we view investing is a very different way than we did 10 years ago, for instance, right?
Yeah.
Ladies, stay tuned for more great conversation and amazing nuggets from our guest. And for now, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. Hello, ladies. Like me, Chris Larson was a professional who started investing over 2 decades ago. After managing his own portfolio of single-family rentals for more than a decade, he discovered what now he calls the holy grail of real estate, multifamily or investing in apartments. In his book, he shares his story of how he created enough passive income to walk away from his six-figure career in medical sales at the age of 38. It's a blueprint to shortcut the process that took him 15 years to figure out and has allowed him to go from not taking a day off for months to now getting to control his time and spend every possible minute being a part of his 10-year-old son's childhood. Learn how you can invest like the rich to create true freedom for yourself by getting a free copy of his book at nextlevelincome.com/bliss, where he'll send you a copy of his book for free. That's nextlevelincome.com/bliss. So when you were talking about supply and demand, ladies, this really translates into buyer's markets and seller's markets. There's always cycles one way or the other. Right now, it seems like it, even though we're seeing inflation and stuff like that, it still feels like it's a seller's market because of inventory. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I think in certain pockets, because I coach across the country and I hear a lot of different things.
Okay.
But we call this the silly season, this cycle. Anytime when the cycle happens, when you know you're getting to the peak of the seller side of this, where the sellers are in control, when you have a seller's market is when everything starts getting a little silly. And then you're going to see that we're going to go down and it'll start turning into a buyer's market. And for a certain period of time, it was a buyer's market because sellers were so greedy. There's this thing called fear and greed index that you can look up on Google, where sellers are so greedy because values were up, rates were down. It's COVID. Don't even look at the house. We just went under contract in a minute and they got greedy. And then rates went up and the buyers backed off and then they got into fear. Right. And now the buyers are coming back out and saying, well, I guess this is what the market will be. We're get it. We're more normal. We understand it. Okay. Maybe I can walk through this a little bit better. But in some pockets, we are seeing some unbelievably silly things. In fact, I'm accumulating some of the things that we're seeing. There was a contract that was written on an owner-occupied house not too long ago that I saw the contract. And in the contract, it said that the seller could name the family who was moving in their first dog. They could name their first dog. And it was written into the contract. Then, and I'm going, yeah, that's not allowed. But, and then just the other day, there were offers on a home. And one of the clients that made the offer called the listing agent and said, how much credit card debt does the seller have? Because what we're going to do is instead of offering more money, we're going to offer to pay off all of their credit card debt. And so buyers are clawing, which means when we see the silly things like this coming in, these videos of, we just love your house. And if we don't get it, I mean, this is what we're starting to see now. You know, you're in the silly season and you know, you're at the peak of the seller's market.
Very interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about, actually, it's a good idea, though, because it affects taxes. Just saying. Instead of paying more for a property to pay off their credit card debt, now we don't have property taxes on that, but they get more money. Yeah. That's very, very clever.
But then the value doesn't go up either. So
that's true. Yeah. I mean, it's all a balancing act, but you know, you kind of work the numbers. So what I'm hearing from you is that if we're in the silly period and we're at the top of the seller's market, that then there will be a pullback. So how do we justify purchasing today as opposed to waiting for that pullback? You know this, everybody is trying to time the market. If you don't have to buy as investors, if you don't have to buy, you're going to try to time the market. So let's talk a little bit about that conversation we just had about this possible turn.
The disruptor in me is I don't try to time the market anymore. I've just learned that if I hold it long enough, it'll come back. I just think time the market because you never know when it was the best time until you're past that. Mm-hmm. You can never know that. You go, oh, now the values are up. So I missed that time. And when the values are up and they go down, you go, hey, I missed that time. But you'll never know that. So trying to time the market is difficult. I think the investment strategy for investors is to put a line in the sand on what you will and won't do and don't pass that line. For me, it's the bottom line. And so for us, we have a certain cash flow. We have a certain appreciation. We have certain rooms. I mean, we all have this certain three bedrooms, four bedrooms, two baths. We have certain things that we look for in the avatar of the home that we're purchasing that we're going to invest in. But so many of us cross over that line by trying to time the market and saying, well, normally wouldn't buy this, but it's a good time to buy. So I will. That's when you get into trouble. Stay the course. Know exactly what the home avatar is for you and don't try to time the market. Again, if the numbers work, the numbers work. And we've had to do this maybe once or twice. We didn't lose our portfolio during the Great Recession or anything, but worst case scenario is that we have converted rentals into our own wrap. We're doing our own wrap around our own mortgage, do a subject to and sell the property. If we have them free and clear, we just offer it as a land contract and say, you know what, more rentals, let's just go with land contracts so we don't have to worry about all the expenses, et cetera. And then I'm not concerned about appreciation or deflation, you know, or depreciation. I'm not concerned about those pieces of it. And we had to do that with two of our properties that were in kind of quirky areas. But generally, if you're buying in the right area that does, we already know the East Coast, the West Coast, and the Mid Coast. Mm-hmm. And in the Mid Coast, you're safer than any place else to make your investments because they just don't succumb to the highs and lows of what's happening in the market.
I love that. And I absolutely agree with you. I never time the market. And let you know, even when I bought my very first property 25 years ago at 8% or whatever, everybody thought we were crazy. The market had gone up 50% in 2 years. I was paying this rate, even though it looked great. We couldn't afford the home. We were like kind of scraping for dimes to make this mortgage. We had to get a roommate. People thought we were nuts. But for us, it's always been, they thought you're buying at the peak of the market, whatever. And it did correct a little bit. I always say to my ladies, make sure you've got the time to be right, which is the way that you're just saying, hold it. You need to be in the market long term. Whatever you buy today, even itself out, and over the long term, it's going to go up, at least in good markets. Do your research on the market. That's definitely an important thing.
It'll go up over years anyway. That's it will. I mean, it'll go up over the years anyway. I think if you're the person that says, because a lot of people get into investing where I'm going to buy a house as an owner occupied, I'm going to live in it for 2 years, and then I'm going to sell it and buy more of investment or another house and sell it. And that's how I'm going to make money. Or I'm going to buy it and I'm going to rent it out 2 years later. That's, I think, when you get into trouble. You need to go in with the thought of, okay, I'm holding this for the long haul. And what is that holding strategy so that I know what my exit strategy is? And I think that's so important for people to understand because I think this is in any market. I see it in the lending business. I'm sure anybody who's a real estate agent listening sees it as well, is that when it's good, everybody flocks into it. They all want to be part of it. And then when, in this case, right now for mortgage lenders, it's a horrible time for them. This is a horrible time for them. Many of them are leaving. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. Some are self-selecting out. They've been in the business for 20, 30 years. They've, okay, I'm done. I'm going to move on to something else. But we also have a whole herd of people that came in and said, well, I heard you guys make tons of money, so I'm going to get in. And then immediately they're out. And the staying power, myself included, I just celebrated 40 years in that industry. 40 years of saying that staying power is where I've reached all the great heights. You can't reach those great heights just by doing shots of, oh, I'll try this. It's all shiny object syndrome, which is SOS for help.
Yes.
Help, right?
Right. We don't have a huge amount of time left because I want to be respectful of your time, Jen. But could you talk a little bit about some of the newer products that are showing up on the market? I know the answers and they're really exciting. So I was hoping you could share some of those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is the one I mentioned a few minutes ago. I feel that because of the lack of inventory, there have been a lot of private investor, private lender investors. I call them investors too, private lender investors that are allowing for new construction, buy and hold, buy and rents. So if you have some experience in that, or you can team up with a builder, that's a really good place to go. And I don't really know. Well, it sounds like you know more of the products that are out there than I do.
I'm in the market looking right now.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that the lenders are doing is trying to be more flexible, offering extensions without penalties and things like that, that we know that what looked really good maybe isn't good. And it's really funny because I personally invested in a fix and flip for just my money. Not me. Fix and flip down in Florida with a guy who's got 1,000 properties under his belt. And hey, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to flip it. And I'm going to sell it really quickly. And it went quick. And I got my money back in 4 months. It was a 12-month thing. I got my money back in 4 months. But someone right down the street who was doing the same thing has had to have 2 extensions. So it's like that movie Twister, where it hits your house and not another, in this market, but not another. And so lenders have been very flexible at making sure that we maintain this industry of investors by allowing for very creative ways to not foreclose on properties for investors. We don't want them. We don't want the property. We're not in the business to hold property. So I'm seeing just a lot more flexibility in that. There is a tightening on the DSCR. It used to be that we could do 1.1 and stuff like that. I'm really seeing, no, it's got to be at 1.2 or higher. That's
what I'm
seeing.
Explain what you mean
there.
With that.
Yeah, the debt service coverage ratio. So I'd have to have an example here, but we look at what your gross rents are minus all of your expenses and get to your net income, your adjusted gross income, if that's what you want, and then compare that to the rent. And we want to have a 1.25 ratio. So meaning that you're collecting 0.25 over the expenses. And whereas before we had a little crunch because we didn't care so much. Oh, you may not be getting a lot of cash flow, but you've got a good appreciation. It's a solid property. It's in a solid area. Now they're saying, we want to see that stretch a little bit more to give us a little more cushion. So there's a little tightening up of qualifying ratios, basically. So that's what I see on the bad side of things. And yeah, I mean, that's what I'm seeing right now with most of the property. Syndications obviously are growing exponentially. They're growing from multifamily into medical buildings because medicine is a big thing. Veterinarian buildings because more people got pets during COVID. So veterinarians, that's growing. And storage facilities, that's also growing for syndication. Those are the things that I'm seeing out in the market. What are you seeing? I want to know what you're seeing.
Yeah. So I'm currently in the market for a loan to refinance a construction loan. We're finished up on a construction project and I would like to hold one of them. So we're selling, we've got two on the market. We'll sell one. I want to hold one. And I've got, for the very first time in my entire life, a commercial piece, which I have so little experience with. I just want the time to get it right as far as who I'm going to put in there. Right now, commercial is such an interesting market. So I'm having to learn a lot. Anyway, so I'm in the market for a refinance on this loan. The construction loan, normally, ladies, I don't know if you know anything about construction, but normally in a construction loan, they have a, I don't even know what it's called, but they have like this buyout rollover where it goes from construction into a permanent 15-year, 30-year loan.
Yeah, it's called construction to perm. Yeah.
That's right. This particular loan that we got, they did not do that. So we just have, I'm keep getting an extension on my construction loan, which is a very expensive way to go. So we need to do our own permanent loan to get kind of out from under that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it that way, but just change the way that the asset is being financed.
Yeah.
So for us, we're looking at a couple of things. We don't qualify personally for the actual loan that's going to require to buy that out. So then what do we do? Well, there's a couple of things we are looking at. One is the bank balance loan, which is a new product on the market. Have you heard about this?
Nope, I haven't heard of this one.
So this one is they strictly look at cash flow on your bank statements. Like how much money
I know bank statement loans. Okay, statement loans. Yes. Okay,
yes.
I thought you were doing some other way of saying it. Of course, bank statement loans have been around for 20 years.
Yes, but they're becoming much more accessible, it seems. They're being marketed more to all of us. They were just one of those things that only certain people seem to know about or were told about. But anyway, so we're starting to hear a lot more about that sort of in the market. So the bank statement loans, which is really nice because a lot of us as real estate investors, our taxes show significantly less income because we're depreciating. So you add those numbers back in, and a lot of lenders won't do that when they're qualifying you. Yeah. They just tank the tax returns as they are, but the bank statement loan allows you to see your true inflow and outflow, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Some other things we're looking at is the possibility of going to like a self-directed IRAs where people have these self-directed lump sums, but they haven't done anything with it. And so going to the custodians and asking them to put together a pool of investors that might have 100,000 each or whatever, and syndicating that, but you don't have to do an SEC syndication. You're just doing it through the custodian and you pull that together and you make that a loan. So these aren't cheap options. You're usually going to pay a little bit higher in rate for that, but it gets you to the next step, which is what we're looking for, right? So those are some of the things that we're looking
for. Well, it's all solutions. Yeah, it's solutions. And I mean, that's why my mortgage company is called Solutions, right? Because mortgage solutions are situational lending. So what you're referencing, I want to just make sure we back this up a little bit. On the bank statement loan, what you're referencing, and I believe I spoke about this last time we talked, but in the world of lending, there's QM, which is a qualified mortgage, which is traditional Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA. After the Great Recession, the Dodd-Frank bill, they elevated the government to say, this set of criteria, as long as you have this set of criteria met by your borrower, Mr. Mortgage Company or bank who's doing lending, as long as that criteria is met, that's considered a qualifying mortgage. And we, the government, will back that mortgage. If it goes into foreclosure, we'll help you get out of it. Remember, we had all these short sales and we couldn't figure out who owned the property because we all owned them in our 401ks.
Right.
And so that's a qualifying mortgage. So traditional financing, you go qualifying mortgage. But when you start getting it into the investor world, there's a couple different options. Most people leave the mortgage company, the QM, and now it's difficult. There's no cash out available in that market. That's why I said there's no cash out there. They've lowered the loan to values, meaning you have to have more money invested in it. They just don't want to do investors right now. And so most people will go to their bank looking for a commercial loan. Well, now that's like nails on a chalkboard for an investor, especially if you own a lot of property. They want everything. They want every lease, you name it, they want it.
Yes.
So they go for the commercial loan. And while the rate, so let's say the rate here is X, this rate in the bank is going to be X plus. It's going to be slightly bigger or slightly higher, but it's going to kill you to figure it out and good luck qualifying. Then we go to QM, non-QM. And this is the market that I play in. This is where the fix and flips are. You can't get fix and flips by calling the mortgage person that you got your primary house from, unless they have QM or non-QM financing. So these are borrowers that don't fit into the traditional qualified mortgage. They're non-qualified mortgages. I own too many properties. My credit score doesn't fit the criteria as a non-owner occupied with QM. So now I have to go here because you may have your credit pulled all the time looking at houses. So you don't fit that. You don't have the reserve requirements. The property's funky. It's quirky. It's more than four units. That's non-QM. The bank statement loan that you're talking about has been in place for almost 20 years in that world. Okay. It's always been there. And it is a great program for self-employed and investor. It's a great, great program for that. And so I'm familiar with that. I think it's just the way that you said it made me think, what is that? Right.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of terminology, right? Understanding that. But non-QM for investors in those bank statement loans. I have a client who has funded over $20 million a year in mortgage loans in non-QM. And by the way, it's owner occupied over here too. You don't qualify over here. If you're a day out of bankruptcy, a day out of foreclosure, you'd have to wait. Over here, you can get that loan pretty quickly. And it's X plus plus, but the difference is how long do you want to wait? 7-5 years and miss a gazillion different cycles of markets, miss all the tax benefits, miss all of the appreciation and the pride of home ownership as well. So that's where we're saying, don't look at this in all consumers. Please don't look at everything as what you're seeing on the news or what you did when you were an owner occupied, because it's totally different. The world. And by the way, if you can't get a loan through non-QM, then you go to the back alleys and you look for the hard money and the private lending that is X plus plus plus. You don't go from oh, went to my bank. They won't approve me for a non-owner occupied. So I'm going to go to a back alley. There's a path you should be going through to find the right terms to fit you.
What other kind of non-QM loans are there? Are there some other products other than the bank statement loan?
Well, there's bank statement, there's equity, right? They look at equity. And so for the investor, they're mostly ran by DSCR, the debt service coverage ratio. So we go from ratios of income to ratios of the property. So now that we're looking at the property. What's great here is that there's adjustable rate mortgages. There are 30-year terms. That's fairly new because 5-6 years ago, there weren't 30-year terms. It was a 30-year due in 5,
that's
30
right.
due in 15, a 25, a 5-year. So now we're seeing a lot more buy and holds in that arena. And mostly because the non-QM world has figured out that it doesn't have to be private money. It can be securitized on Wall Street the same way that a commercial loan and then an owner occupied or QM loan, even if it's non-owner, they're all securitized by Wall Street. So now they have more money behind them. And those investors want stability. They don't want a short-term gain. They want a really, really long-term. So they've opened that up for long-term investing in that side. So yeah, there's adjustables, there's interest-onlys, there's 30-year fix, there's owner-occupied, there's non-owner-occupied. But what I do with my company, Situational Lending, is non-owner-occupied, non-QM. I do nothing else. I don't do anything else. I've got some sources for private. Mm-hmm. I've got some sources for that back alley hard money, but that's the kind of financing I do now. I don't get involved in any of this anymore. So if you've been turned down, then you can come to me. I would say skip over your bank if you don't want to go through the HELL.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, it's a pain. It is a pain in the butt. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, perfect. I want to get to extra. And so, and we're going to be talking in extra, ladies, about this whole idea of not working in and on your business, but working above and beyond your business. This is a pretty high level strategy. Jen is amazing at it. So I do want to cover it because it's not something we've ever talked about. So we're going to say goodbye on this portion of the show and we're going to go to extra. Jen, how can people reach you or reach your company and your other mortgage brokers and that sort of thing if they want to get in touch?
The best way, and you can see down here, is just text Jen to 26786. Again, text J-E-N to 26786, and that starts getting us connected. But you can always reach me at jen@nduplessis.com and someone on my team or myself will reach out to you no matter what your questions are, because you know, I'm a speaker, I'm a coach, I'm a mentor, I have masterminds, I have all of those things going on. So if you just want to find out more about how to work with me or how you could work with me, if this resonates with you, send to jen@jenduplessis.com and then I'll sort you into which company that works best for.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. And ladies, of course, that will all be in the show notes on my website at blissfulinvestor.com. Stay tuned. We've got more. For those of you who have not subscribed to Extra, you can do that by going to realestateinvestingforwomenextra.com. For those of you that are leaving us now, thank you so much for joining Jen and I for this portion of the show. I look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, remember, goals without action are just dreams. So get out there, take action, and create the life your heart deeply desires. I'll see you soon. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to find out more about how to become a blissful millionaire, go to blissfulinvestor.com. See you next time.